Welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat, and my wonderful guest is Barbara Nixon. Barbara, hello.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you so much for having me, Phil. I'm really pleased to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm doing well. Are you well?
I'm really well. It's a good week. This week's actually turned out to be a really good week.
Brilliant, brilliant. Now, Barbara, you're a success and leadership coach, mm-hmm. but also at the same time, you're a podcast and radio host.
Yes, that's
Barbara,
right.
Tell our listeners something about yourself in terms of how did you get into the success and leadership coach? What exactly is it? And tell us a bit more about the podcasting and radio presenting.
Yeah, well, so thank you. I've been in the people development and leadership space for 26 years now, which is pretty much all of my career. And I always say that, but in actual fact, it probably started a lot sooner than that, because I was one of those kids that's a bit strange. And I started reading personal development books when I was a teenager. I used to have really good conversations with my dad. And I remember the first self-help, it's called self-help now. That's the self-help section now of the bookshop. But back then it was personal development. And I got the 1 minute manager from the library, and Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway from the library when I was about 14. And I was hooked on personal development since then. But I never knew that that was a career. I didn't even realise that that was something that I could do. And so I decided that I was going to be a chat show host and be following the footsteps of Terry Wogan and Michael Parkinson. And I used to love, because they always spoke to the best people, didn't they? They were so interesting. We're talking back in the 80s and 90s now. And I went to university and did a degree in journalism, but also psychology at the same time, because I was so interested in people, but I thought the journalism would get me to be the next Terry Wogan. And I did that degree. And then quite soon afterwards, I got a call from a recruitment agency saying there's a role working in the people development team of a big retailer. In the head office, do you want it? Do you want to go for it? It wasn't, do you want it? Do you want to go for it? And the answer was yes, without a doubt, I wanted to do that, because that was always what I wanted. I just didn't realise that that was a career. It was a something I could do. So this really kickstarted everything. And during that, I was in that particular role for 7 years, and then I went over to another big retailer for 5 years. So 13 years all in corporate. Learning my craft. So I looked, I was in leadership development, as I learned about manufacturing and logistics and head office in all aspects, different sectors of businesses. And it was, and back in 2010, I'd just come back from maternity leave from having my youngest daughter. And I'd never really had a proper maternity leave, just because the length of time has obviously changed. And I had a good chunk of time off. I think it was the best part of a year. And I realised that actually during that time, I had thinking time and I wanted to do something else. And I'd always wanted to run my own business, and that this was actually the time that I was going to do it. So I left my corporate career and I started a training consultancy with my business partner back then. And we ran that for 5 years. For lots of different businesses. We went over to Europe, and we worked in America, and we worked all over. And after 5 years, I realised that I'd made another job for myself, and it just wasn't quite what I wanted. And so in 2015, I did a pivot. I left that business, did a pivot, and started working with senior leaders, senior business owners, managing directors, to help them get out of their own way, basically, to remove the blocks that hold them back. Because what I noticed throughout all of that time, and I'd had a similar journey myself, was that as humans, we're really good at making things a lot harder than they need to be. And as we progress as well through our career, we often need that support more than ever. And I was getting lots of senior leaders talking to me saying, I feel stuck in the weeds, or I am really struggling with self-doubt and confidence, or feeling like an imposter, or I just don't feel like I'm worthy. I don't feel like I belong at this space. Am I good enough? And all of this is actually stopping me from doing the work that I need to do. And when I started working with them, I saw that once we got these people working really, really well, so we removed those blocks and they elevated as leaders, and they became a lot more confident, and they became a brilliant role model for everybody else. So the ripple effect was actually huge. So they were able to then influence the people around them, and their teams became happier, and their families became happier because they were working fewer hours, and they were working weekends, and they were just more confident and less stressed. And so everything around them started to fall into place. And I just loved that because, again, if we go full circle back when I was a kid, that's what I was seeing, you know, with the conversations that I was having with my dad, that when he was supported well at work, things were great, you know. I mean, and he was a fun dad anyway, but it was more fun. And we, so I saw that back then, but I'm able to influence that now.
Right.
And the other thing that I realized was that we all need support. We're all just really good, as I said, really good at making things harder than they need to be. And I think in answer to your question about how did I become a radio presenter and a podcast host, that was something that was always something that on the cards, really, back when I did the journalism and the wanted to be Terry Wogan. So I always wanted to kind of do it. It's in hospital radio that I do my show. And I wanted to do it, and life got in the way. And I remember my dad was in, it was ill when in my 20s, and he was in intensive care a lot. And I'd walk past to go to his ward, to go to where he was. I'd walk past the hospital radio in the hospital that he was in. And I thought, oh, I really want to do that. But life just happened. And then I had a lovely meeting that was very, it was synchronicity at its best, Phil, where I just happened to be in a party, and I got talking to somebody, and a lovely lady who was a radio presenter as well. And she said, come and join us, come and present, come and apply. And I did that, and I've just loved it ever since. And then the podcast is me talking to amazing people like you, you know, and being Terry Wogan for a little bit every single week. So yeah, it gives me, it's all just mishmashed together. Yeah.
Yeah. That's brilliant. When I think back, you know, your 26 years in people development, and yeah, how many children have you got now?
I've got three and a stepson. I mean, they're older now, so I don't, yeah, they're not, yeah, but they're, yeah, all older now.
But when you sort of think of, you know, that sort of career, and obviously bringing up your children as well, and then on top of that, you know, some of the real successes that you've had, it probably sounds like to our listeners, there's an awful lot there that you've really achieved and accomplished. Mm-hmm. And a lot of hard work. When you were going through those that career process, were there any times where you felt this is quite challenging, and what kind of things were going through your mind at that time? How did you sort of deal with those challenges?
Oh, all levels, every single stage I went through challenges. I often say that everything that I support people with now, I have absolutely lived it. So I'm definitely not the finished article, nor have I ever been. I think of myself as a work in progress. So there's been so many challenges. Just to pick out a few, back in the early days of my career, I struggled with self-doubt and playing small, you know, just hiding. I used to, like, I remember one of my first managers used to say, stop hiding your light under a bushel, you know, that old saying. But it was, you know, not putting myself out there as much, but it was down to the self-doubt. And it's just, and I suppose an element of imposter syndrome as well, that you find yourself in a new level and you've not acclimatized to that level yet, you know, and you're surrounded by people who are more experienced and who you believe to be better than you because they've been there, done it, worn the t-shirt. And all of those are really natural thoughts, although you don't realize it, and you often don't you don't think of it that way when you're going through it, but it's easy for me now to realize that it's just part and parcel of being human. And when I first certainly started my businesses, moving away from the safety of corporate and being one of the team and be, you know, one of many, many people. I worked for big businesses, so I was one of many people. There's a real safety in that. And then all of a sudden, it's just me. It can feel very, you know, you feel very vulnerable, very exposed, and just be invisible. I went through a stage of struggling with stage fright because all of a sudden I was, you know, I just felt like I was on show. So all of those things, you know, I've experienced.
Yeah, I can identify with what you're just saying there. Even things like the imposter syndrome. But I've known of occasions where I was asked to do a presentation or present at an event. And I just remember having that moment of panic.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I could never tell you why. But having that sort of moment of panic and actually backing out.
Mm.
And I just remember how I felt after it. And I just thought, I'm not going to do that again. Mm. You know, because what was it for? It was basically a lack of belief in myself.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think about, you know, your dream to be Terry Wogan. What an accolade, really. To be such an icon of the... you know, sort of a host of a chat show.
Mm.
But he was more than that, you know, radio presenter. You've kind of followed in his footsteps, haven't you?
On a very tiny, tiny scale, yeah. I think what I loved about it, and Michael Parkinson, obviously, you know, these are just icons, aren't they?
Yeah.
I love the fact that he got to sit and talk to really interesting people. Back when I started reading personal development books, I also got addicted to autobiographies because back then we didn't have podcasts and things are available now, just reading like posts, reading posts, and people are doing lives and things. They're sharing their experiences all the time. But back then, it was listening to somebody like Terry Wogan on the telly, or you're reading autobiographies. That's how you got behind the scenes of somebody's life.
Yeah.
And that's all I wanted, was just to kind of...
Yeah.
The opposite.
I mean, I think it's great. And again, I can sort of identify with what you're saying, certainly with the autobiographies, because I find, like you, I find people inspiring.
Yeah,
and I liked, you know, you hear about achievements, but you don't hear about what it took to achieve and the journey somebody went on. And so when you're reading an autobiography, all of a sudden now you're peeling back the curtains and you're seeing, wow, this wasn't such an easy journey, perhaps. And
it kind of busts a bit of a myth of an overnight success, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that everybody's just grafting away behind the scenes, and that it actually takes something.
Just thinking there about what we just said about the imposter syndrome, even with what you've just described, I mean, comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah.
And it kills people's dreams and aspirations, because the moment you start to compare, you lose every time, don't you? And so when you're thinking about the stories that people portray on social media, you don't get to see what's going on behind the scenes. You just see the front stuff, and you're thinking, well, I'm not like that. Well, no, you are, because you've not walked their journey.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's taken a lot for them to get there. And maybe they're not actually saying all that's really going on.
Exactly. My mum used to have a saying, you never know what's going on behind closed doors. And I think that there's an element of that, isn't there? Where we're on, certainly on social media, we all do it. We present our show reel, you know, of this is the things that we're proud of, and this is things that, you know, it's going well. Sometimes we might share a little bit behind the scenes, but and some people do it brilliantly. But most of the time it's just, you know, what other people are wanting you to see.
Yeah,
and I completely agree with comparison. It can creep up on you, and even in things like meetings, you know, you might be sat in a meeting and looking around the room, and if you're not careful, you're putting other people on a pedestal, And what happens when you put somebody else above? You're immediately below, aren't you? You can't compete with what's going on in your own mind. And that you might think, oh, well, they've got this qualification and I haven't, or they've got this experience and I haven't, or they've done this and I haven't, or they're more confident than me. We don't ever stop for a second and think, they might be really terrified right now speaking up. They might have, you know, been in the toilets, you know, trying to gather their own thoughts. We don't think about any of that. We think, oh, they're doing really, really well. So that means I'm not. So instantly we're elevating somebody else to diminish ourselves. But it's, again, it's something that we do without even realizing it.
I often say to people, you know, you need to be kind to yourself. Yeah. And I think one of the things about being kind to yourself is actually taking a moment to see, where have I come?
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like you think that you're nowhere. Perhaps if you're comparing yourself to other people, you may not be that successful leader, because look at this person over here and how they're doing. But in actual fact, what you don't recognize is how far you've actually come to where you are now. And it's like the line in a movie I love called The Holiday. And and there's a point in which Jude Law says to, one of the other characters, he goes, look at you. You're better than you think.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I know. You know what other line I love in that film? You've got me talking about films now. This is it. Is where the older actor, and I can't remember, he's a famous actor, I can't remember, and he says to Kate Winslet, you're acting like the best friend, but you should be the leading lady, you know, of your own life.
Yes, yes.
And she goes, of course, I should be the leading lady of my own life. But often we don't. I see this a lot, where we put ourselves at the bottom of our own pecking order, and everybody else comes first, and everybody else is better than us.
I see that even in people's decision-making around the use of their money.
Yeah.
The number of people I come across who will think nothing of spending their money on other people.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But won't spend it on themselves. It's almost like they feel ashamed or guilty mm-hmm. for spending it on themselves. And I remember one lady, I often tell this story, who said, oh, I'm not into brands. I don't go for brands. You know, if I like something, I like it. And that's it. I'm not buying stuff for brands. And we're having this long conversation, and we get to talking about buying presents for loved ones, you know, special occasions, things like this. And all of a sudden she said, oh, of course I buy brands for them. And I said, really? I said, you just told me that you're not interested in brands. Oh yeah, but you've got to buy them for your loved ones and for your friends. And I said, why? And she said, well, it shows how much you value them. So I said, but how much do you value you?
Yes.
And I think that is a pertinent question for all of us, even those listening now. Ask yourselves a question. How much do I value me?
Exactly that. And I have those exact conversations too with people who buy their spouses, their children, gifts and things, but they won't invest in themselves. And it can come down to anything. I'll take time off if my family need me, but I won't take time off for myself, you know. And often, I think that, I just want to go back to what you said. I think it's such a lovely question to ask yourself, how much do I value myself? And to give yourself a little bit of time, going back to something else you said, Phil, was about looking at about how far you've come. So often we don't want to, or we're taught as a kid, don't blow your own trumpet. Nobody likes a show off, you know, all of these things are these little sayings that get ingrained into our soul. And so it's difficult when we're looking back to think, oh, I did this, I achieved this, rather than, oh, we did it as part of a team. And yes, there's always going to be other people involved, but you were part of the, you know, you're part of the process. But it's about ownership, thinking, actually, I actually played a part in this.
Yeah.
And this is not just how far I've come.
I do think that it's actually quite damaging, I think, the this cultural belief that we don't big ourselves up.
Yeah.
I think there's a point in where you're thinking, do you know what? They're just a bit over the top.
Yes.
But I think it's really important to recognize, like you say, taking responsibility is also saying, I did do that. Mm-hmm. I achieved that. You know, had it not been for me, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know, and recognizing these things and recognizing, wow, you know, so I do have those abilities. I am sort of gifted that way, or I'm capable. And yeah, you're right about it's your own journey. Mm. It's nobody else's journey. So when we go back to that comparison, that we can't, because this isn't their journey and theirs isn't your journey.
No, so exactly. And that's exactly right. I think it's just about really understanding they're on their own path. They're on their own path. So we can't actually compare, because it's not like for like. Even if, you know, you might have grown up next door to somebody and gone to similar schools and, you know, maybe worked in the same places, you've still got different conditioning. You've still got different, you know, just loads of, we could talk about this all day, different belief systems that you have that will actually shape who you are. So I think it's so true, but it's such a common rabbit hole that we fall into, isn't it, to say.
It is. You hear it quite regularly in our society. And I think as well, it's understanding that we have different values. We are unique individuals. So the very fact that we are unique means you can't compare. It's impossible to compare, because you're not comparing like for like at all.
No, not at all.
Just thinking about, you know, your the work that you've done in terms of the leadership side. I mean, for many leaders, it can be challenging. First and foremost, there's occasions where people are put into leadership because they were good at their job.
Mm.
Whatever they were doing, they were good at, so we make them a leader. But we do it without actually giving them the tools to be a good leader. So it's almost like we're kind of setting them up for failure, really, if they can't somehow latch onto what are the good ways of being that leader and inspiring those that's supposed to follow.
Yeah.
What would you say in that situation?
There's a couple of things, really. Firstly, I completely agree. Because of the way that most companies are structured, it's very, you know, hierarchical. You know, we go from being good, doing one job, and then if you get promoted, all of a sudden you've got a team. And not everybody's cut out for having a team. Not everybody wants that. I think there's a real need for like specialist roles in organizations. So if you're great at something, maybe you're a great engineer, for instance, the next step up is what? Let make you a better engineer, specialize in that area without having to lead other people. So I completely agree. It happens a lot where people get promoted and then they want the next progression, obviously, because of, you know, it's natural to want that. But then they flounder because they're not great at leading other people, or they've not been given the skills, or they find out that it's not what they want. And they do less of what they were good at and more of everything that they don't really like. And so they end up, you know, it's not got always a happy ending. So I think there's a little bit of an out the box thinking needed for some businesses. Yeah. But I also think that then that training needs to happen, and it often needs to happen before somebody gets to that position. If they're having an inkling of a thought that, yes, I'd like to progress, they should be starting to get those skills. And one of the things that I always think is that you can start to get those skills without going on courses. It's just by having great role models and having exposure to different things. So I see a lot of leaders that might delegate or maybe struggle with delegation. And what about if we didn't think of delegation? We thought of actually, let's just take somebody with us and show them what's going on, and just expose somebody to something that you're doing that they don't have to do, they don't currently do. Maybe take them to a meeting. And you might take different people to different meetings and just show them what happens. Or you might just, if as you need to look at the next level up and think, right, how can I be the best leader so that it's a natural thing for other people to follow in my footsteps? Because again, as humans, we're copying machines. We'll naturally copy great traits and negative ones as well, but we'll pick it up just by osmosis, just by being around somebody. So I think it doesn't always
It's
have to be formal training.
no, and I just think I often talk about different periods in a child's development, and I'll bring the linkage in here. The child's development, Maurice Massey's a sociologist, discovered like three levels of development periods. And the first one was very much a sponge. So they just watched and observed and just soaked up what was actually happening in front of them, what they were seeing. And then there's a modeling period where you're trying things on, you're trying other people's values on just to see, well, how does this fit with me? How do I respond to this? How does it feel? Do I feel comfortable? Am I trying to be somebody else, or am I still trying to be myself, but developing something of that quality within myself? And then there's the sort of peer influence. So it's down to what you're saying about what you're being exposed to. Now, this is in a child development, but if you take those principles of what you're talking about and that osmosis, then what a great opportunity for somebody to really learn and absorb what they're seeing, and actually have an opportunity to have a go and see, how does this feel for me? Or can I bring my personality into this? Does it enhance it, or do I need to make some changes?
And what you just said is key, is am I able to, I'm trying to emphasize, but am I able to make some changes? Because something that I see, and again, I think we've all fallen foul of this at some point, is trying to copy somebody else and trying to be, following their footsteps. But I often think it's like wearing somebody else's shoes. On paper, it's fine, but it's, in reality, they're not your shoes. They don't fit your feet. So we have to be able to try things on, but there almost needs to be some time before you actually become a leader, where you sit down and think, what kind of a leader do I want to be? Because it's such a powerful position, because you're impacting other people. You've got the power to develop somebody, to make it a brilliant place to work, or the complete opposite. So what kind of a leader do I want to be in order to get the most out of my people? Who do I, in order for me to look myself in the mirror at the end of the day, who do I want to be? How does that play out for me? But also, I think there's a key part there where we don't dismiss our needs. So what do I need in order for me to be the best that I can be? How do I want to work? How do I want to, what are my boundaries? What is a Where do I always get the best out of myself? So they both have to go hand in hand. But I think often we don't actually give ourselves that time to think, well, I'm stepping into this role, but what does that actually mean? What do what how do I do it well?
I think another thing I was just thinking is you were just describing how you can sort of challenge yourself and ask yourself, but also at the same time, for whether it's a business leader, a department head, a leader of whatever nature, if they're observant enough of those they're leading to see who has got the potential, and don't just look at them in terms of they're good at doing their job, but look at how they interact with other people. Do they fit in? Are they warm? Have they got a good character that draws people in and draws people alongside? Are they encouraging? Are they inspiring? You know, what other characteristics do they see? Because those can also inform them as to whether that's a good choice to take that person on the leadership journey, or whether, going back to what you were saying earlier, do I just develop their specialism?
Yeah, exactly. Well, or just ask them, what is it you want? What do you want to do? And again, sometimes people say to me, but they're happy in their position. And that's fine. That's totally fine if somebody doesn't want to progress. We don't always, even sometimes staying in the same role is, you know, is progression. It's great. But do they actually, have you exposed them to everything? Because I've seen situations where they've gone, hang on a minute, I didn't know that was a thing. I really want to do that. Or I've never had a go at that. And now I'm really good at it. So are they just seeing a small part of, you know, their role and what you ask them to do every day? Or are they seeing the bigger picture as well? I think, there's a lot of things to take into account. And also, have you done everything to bring out those qualities that you've talked about? Because sometimes you can be that person outside of work, but because of the nature of the job or because of the situation, you're just not that person in work. So
I've seen people do that. I've seen people, they're like a Jekyll and Hyde. And I mean it in the best way possible, that they're one thing at work, but a different thing outside in the social environment. Exactly.
I remember working with somebody. Oh, it's happened to me so many times, actually, now that I've started talking about it. But this one person sticks into my mind many years ago. And we were working on this person's confidence. And they were a senior manager and they were struggling with their confidence. And we were just having a cuppa, you know, over a coffee. And I said, what happens outside of work? What do you do? And outside of work, they did everything, you know, they were doing all sorts of different hobbies. They were in the light, you know, they were doing quite high profile things in their community, and nothing tied up with no confidence. And I said, hang on, but have you got no confidence outside of work as well? Oh no, I'm fine outside of work. And it was just, it was because of the role and the situation that they were in work that it just sapped things out, you know, it just drained them. So once we fixed that, all of a sudden, you know, they were themselves again.
Yeah. Do you find that sometimes in those positions, it's actually the individuals in the wrong role?
Yes and no. Sometimes, Or I think it's sometimes just, and I'm going to use the word again, it's acclimatizing to the role. You might be in a more senior position and you're just not quite settled in there yet. So your imposter is coming out and you're in a critic and you've just not quite got there yet. So the natural thing to do is to shy away, is to shrink, to hide. And sometimes that hiding can become a habit. It's just the norm at work.
Right.
And it's again comfortable.
I'm just thinking there's a couple of things I'd really like to ask you. One is, say, a hypothetic business, and there's an individual that has the potential or wants to be a leader. They aspire to a leadership position, and yet everything about them tells you they're not a leader.
Mm-hmm.
How would you go about dealing with that situation? What would you say to, you know, a leader of a business if they're kind of grappling with, how do I talk with them? How do I, you know, how do I deal with this situation? Because they're clearly not a leader, yet this is what they aspire to. How would you deal with that?
Well, I kind of think about it a little bit differently. If they've got the aspiration, I don't actually think that we want to do things that we're not able to do. You know, I think most of us want to do things that we are able to do. And I've not met many people who are really definitely not, this is definitely not you. They've got some skills, you know, and I think certainly if they've got the aspiration, I'd start there and say, right, what is it about that you want to do? Why do you want to be a leader? What do you see a leader to be? So maybe it's even just having the definition of a leader. It's having, you know, maybe theirs is not the same as yours. And maybe you're looking at it from a different perspective. So I'd go right back to basics and say, the fact that you want to do it is great, but what about it appeals to you? And where else are you showing those skills?
Yeah, what if, though, you're talking with this person and you just find their very nature, their character, quite abrasive, but they don't see it themselves. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're purposely going out of their way to be that, but, you know, we talk about, communication. You know, it's like, body language, like, and tone represents about 70% of our communication. Yeah. And so when you think of those things, oftentimes the way people communicate, the tone of their communication can sort of, it's like somebody dragging nails down a chalkboard or something, you know, and you think, oh, it just really grates on me. So if they really want to be a leader, but they've got this abrasive character that you just know is never going to win hearts and minds. I'm just thinking, because I'm thinking of people I've met
that you've like met. That. Yeah, yeah, so I think one feedback is absolutely essential, because whenever I've met people that are similar to what you're saying, is they just don't know what they don't know. You know, they haven't got, because nobody's actually had the courage or the confidence to sit down and tell them exactly what they need to hear. So having really good feedback, and then if they're still, you know, we still want to progress, then starting small and say, right, okay, let's look at your body language first. What can we do, you know, and practice, because things like body language, that's just a habit. You can change it. Yes. You can, you know, so it's, if this is what you want to do, then let's change that, you know, just work on that. And I've worked with people where members of their team have come up to me and said, crikey, what have you done to him? It's like, you know, he's fallen and banged his head or something, because he's a completely different person. And I think if they're sat in front of you and they're having that conversation, then they're wanting to develop, they're wanting to do something, and it's just about them knowing what the problem is. Like, well, tell me what it is and I'll do something about it and we'll start to work. I think the issue comes when they think that they're a leader and think that they're doing a great job and they're not open to feedback, or they're not open to being, you know, supported, or they're not open to that change, then that's a completely different conversation, isn't it? If they're aspiring to it and they want to do it, but they've just got it wrong, then you've got something that you can make some changes. You can work.
Yeah, you can work with it, can't you? Yeah. I was just thinking, one of the things that comes across quite a lot in the workplace is when people are worrying about things. So within the world of finances, it's often said that 94% of the working population worry about money. Mm. And we know, what, even for ourselves, if we think about ourselves, when we're worrying about something, it can be quite distracting. Yeah. So our ability to be fully engaged and be as productive as we could be is somewhat impeded. It's hampered. And also, while we're worrying, it drastically reduces our creative ability, our problem-solving skills. If a leader has got somebody within their team that just, and it could be, you know, financial worry, but it could be worry about anything, how would you sort of encourage that leader to really sort of help that individual, even just to start a conversation? Because that can be challenging, can't it?
Yeah, it can be. And this is why I always kind of invite people to have regular communications, so regular one-to-ones. And it's easy to say, oh, well, my door's always open, my team can always speak to me, or I'm always in the office mulling around, we talk all the time. It's not the same. It's just not the same. And I think back to when I first started work, and, you know, I was, it, age isn't an issue here. It can be at any age, but I remember this being me back when I first started. And I worked for somebody great. I've always been very blessed to work with amazing people, but I wouldn't have probably gone up to them and said, oh, I'm struggling to pay my rent this month, you know, or I'm really worried about this going on. I wouldn't have had that conversation. And I don't think it's a confidence thing. I just wouldn't have done it, you know?
Did you ever have anybody say to you, I operate an open door policy? I had a boss who said that to me, and I thought, great. But he sat behind a big desk on a big chair, and he had a little chair at the other side of his desk. I'm thinking, what you've just described, I thought, yeah, I too wouldn't, absolutely no way go and speak to him about
I wouldn't. You know, but if we had regular one-to-ones, and again, I was very lucky that that was always the case for me, but if you have regular one-to-ones with your team that aren't always task-focused, that are, you know, you're talking as equals and you're having a conversation, that's that person's space, that's their time, and they're more likely to come out. So even in how are things at home, what's going on, what are you doing at the weekend, and it might just slip out with, oh, we can't go out this weekend because we've got money troubles, in going back to your example, or we're trying to look after, you know, not spend as much at the minute, or, you know, it could come out in different ways. But even if it doesn't, you've got that safe space to have those conversations.
Yeah.
And having them regularly every single month, like clockwork, it just becomes the norm. It just becomes business as usual. And even if one month it's, you know, 10 minutes because everybody's fine, everybody's, you know, great, and all you're doing is talking about what you watched on TV last night, it doesn't matter,
because
it's just you've had that time. And what you're building is trust, you know, and that's gold, isn't it? So if you've got that trust with your team, then they're going to have those conversations if they want to.
Yeah, I'm just conscious of time, but I really would like, if you don't mind, just sort of winding back a little bit to when we talked about the fact that you're a radio host and a podcast host.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the radio host side, and what kind of things do you do, and how that's going.
It's something that I absolutely love. It's so close to my heart. So I'm a radio presenter for Harrogate Hospital Radio, and I have a show on a Friday. I actually have three shows, but my main show is on a Friday from 4 till 6, which is Feel Good Friday, and it's the best fun. It does exactly what it says on the tin. It is feel good. It is the idea is to kickstart you into the weekend. I play only feel good songs. You know, we have a moment where we have a kitchen dance party where I play three dancey, you know, tunes. I'm thinking ABBA and the Nolans and, you know, whatever, you know, songs that'll just fill the dance floor. And it's just the best fun. So, right, and I absolutely love it.
Barbara, you've just reminded me again, there's another line out of that movie I mentioned earlier, The Holiday, where I think Jack Black is in a Blockbuster video store, and he turns and he's doing the music to the movies. Can you guess the movie? Mm-hmm. But part of what he'd said earlier to Kate Winslet was, this is a piece I've written for you, and I've used only the good notes.
Only the what a line that is, right? I've used only the good notes, so I play only the songs that'll just make you smile, feel happy. So it's just an absolute joy. I've been doing it for 2 years. It's 2 years round about now. I feel as though I've been doing it forever. It's at first it was like, it felt like an of course-ness, you know, like, of course, this is what I should be doing because I've wanted to do it forever. So it's just a joy. Love it.
Again, in your way, following in the footsteps of Terry Wogan, because Terry Wogan was a great radio presenter. You know, so he did fantastic. I loved listening to his shows. So that's the Feel Good Friday, and that's from
4 till 6 on a Friday.
Brilliant. Now, so any listeners who are able to pick up Harrogate Hospital Radio, you're in for a treat if you're around it from 4 until 6 for the Feel Good Friday.
Right, it's just so much fun. And the podcast, again, that started because I wanted to just chat to interesting people. And I know you're coming on my podcast, which I'm really delighted about. And it's called Smash Your Own Ceiling. It's all about personal development. And how you can actually be better and do better. And it's just an absolute joy. I love it.
Yeah. Now, you have something, and I think if I got it right, Stuck in the Weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me briefly about that, Stuck in the Weeds.
So this is a concept, this is a feeling more than anything. So it's where you feel as though you literally can't, you're not progressing, you're not moving forward, you're not doing anything that's going to move the needle for you, because you are stuck in the day-to-day. And it can happen to all of us, right? It doesn't matter what role you have. It tends to be for more senior people, but it really doesn't matter. But you're just stuck in the day-to-day. So what we do is look at what's going on, and how to actually elevate you and create space, create that headspace so that you've got more time to do things that'll actually progress and move you forward. So it's because that can be quite it can feel quite awful when you're in that space for too long, like you're just spinning plates and treading water.
I know of people who, in their career, they've got perhaps the later in life in their career, and they just think, what could I do? And they almost like you feel like saying to them, "Are you stuck in the weeds?"
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes they just need that encouragement and that, drawing their attention to some of the good, some of the positives. Some of the in terms of skills, even the transferable skills that they hold.
Yeah, absolutely. For older people that might be, they might have changed roles, or they might no longer be working, or that's perfect for, but I think in general, it's definitely about changing your mindset about what you're doing every single day. So some of the things that take up our time are very mindset driven. So for example, if I'm a leader and I've got a team and I'm spending my time fixing problems that my team should be fixing on their own, or attending meetings back to back when I don't need to be, it's about being more discerning and start to really value your time and look at what is it that's actually going to move the needle for me. Is it attending this meeting, or is it actually doing some brainstorming, or is it doing a different task? So it's about being a lot more discerning. But in order to do that, we have to untangle quite a lot of limiting beliefs, old mindset ways, just old ways of working.
Yeah, Barbara, this has been absolutely fantastic. And like you say, we could talk
Yeah, we can.
for ages, but I'm just conscious that time's passed us by. Barbara, anything that you've said, if it's resonated with any of our listeners, how could they get hold of you and chat with you or what have you?
So I am my main playground is LinkedIn. So come and find me, just Barbara Nixon on LinkedIn, and you can just follow me for regular tips. I'm there usually every single day. If you want some more resources, you can go to my website, which is barbaranixon.co.uk, and there's my blog, and you can access my podcast on there, or just look for the podcast either on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, Barbara, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I look forward to further conversations. Thank you.
Thank
Really
you so
appreciate
much. I've really enjoyed it, Phil. Thanks.
it. It's been an absolute pleasure. You take care.